Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Trottle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing, and the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, our radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. Welcome back to Throttle Up. And this is a special edition of Throttle Up. It's actually a continuing of our series that we were doing. This happens to be part four of Innovation in America. So our series is Innovation in America. And this is the fourth part of that. And I guess you're going to be asking me how many parts we're going to have. And I'm not sure. It is important and it's timely. And it's something that we are doing, and it may very well be unique in the land of radio and podcasts. Not sure. I hope it's not, by the way. But nevertheless, we are going to be discussing innovation in America. This happens to be our part four of the series. Now, why do we talk about that? Well, I guess you could say that we are talking about it primarily of because of what Newt Gingrich is doing. He is promoting this whole idea of critical thinking. Now, Newt is not the only one, by the way. There's are many people out there that are joining in or that are leading the way in this area of critical thinking, complex problem solving, and innovation. Now, they all go hand in hand. And we have discussed those three things on the show many times. So just to quickly review that so that we sort of can understand it perhaps a little bit better. Okay, here we go. Critical thinking, what is that? To be able to think critically is important if we are doing something that is important. All right. That could be, or typically it is a purposeful activity. So we are engaged in a purposeful activity. Could be anything. It could be something that we do individually. It could be something that we do within an organization. It could be something that we do within a educational enterprise. And the list goes on and on. We are engaged in a purposeful activity, and to be able to think critically within that context is important for us to succeed, not only for ourselves and our family, but also for our organization and ultimately our country. Okay, complex problem solving is an offshoot of that or is related to that, and it gets a little bit more specific and a bit more technical. We have covered that in the past. I'm not going to get into that very deeply now, but complex problem solving also contains its own set of skills and attributes, which are important because you cannot solve a nonlinear problem using linear thinking. And just to be sure of our language here, a complex problem is by definition nonlinear. All right. So if we are going to do nonlinear problem solving, which is synonymous with complex problem solving, we cannot solve a nonlinear problem utilizing linear thinking. And that's particularly important, and we should always keep that in the forefront of our thinking process as we get involved in whatever we are doing. All right, so let me talk a little bit more about innovation. Now, the definition of innovation. So I'm going to throw out this definition. You can create your own. Check it on the dictionary. Not all that helpful, but that's a starting point. My definition of innovation is this. Innovation imagines a future situation that contains the expression of a new idea that as yet does not exist. Such an idea might prove it beneficial for large groups of people. So that is my definition of innovation. Okay, so let's press on with this part four of this show on Innovation in America. And I'm going to start off after the definition. I'm going to start off with something that is in the news, all right? And this happens to be And this is particularly important, and it relates directly to what we're going to be talking about today on Throttle Up. And that is that the American economy is improving dramatically. A front page article in the Wall Street Journal, July 28th and 29th of 2018, that's a Saturday and Sunday edition. It says, growth revs as economy rolls on. Subtitle, consumer spending, business investment helped U.S. GDP grow at a 4.1% clip this spring. Goes on to say that the U.S. economy grew at the fastest pace in nearly 4 years this spring, reflecting broad-based momentum that suggests the second longest expansion on record isn't yet running out of fuel. Further, it goes on to say that the robust consumer spending, solid business investment, surging exports, and increased government outlays were among the factors that boosted gross domestic product. The value, and they're defining it, what is gross domestic product, the value of all goods and services produced across the economy. Further, it says that at a seasonally and inflation-adjusted annual rate of 4.1%. In the second quarter, the Commerce Department reported recently. That was up from the first quarter's revised growth of 2.2%. Now it says here that after stripping out the volatile categories of trade, inventories, and government spending, sales to private domestic buyers rose at an annual rate of 4.3%, even better than the overall GDP. Further, it says that the outlook for the industrial economy remains solid. And it goes on to explain further about the economy. Now, why am I bringing that into the discussion? I'm bringing that into this discussion for a very important reason, which is with a growing economy, with a viable economy, not stuck in the doldrums, but out in the open and moving quickly in all sectors, this opens up the door for innovation. It opens up the door for Americans to innovate, to create new ideas, to create new products, new product lines, to start up new businesses, to start up new divisions within an existing business, to go after things that didn't look like they were promising in the past, and now they are or could very well be. And also to invent new business models, new ways of conducting business, so that we can continuously innovate and create on a regular basis. And of course, innovation and creativity is, in my view, the fuel of the economic engine. Without innovation and creativity, we have no fuel for the economic engine. It will stagnate and eventually it will shut down. And so innovation and creativity is extremely important. And how do we get there? We get there by emphasizing critical thinking and complex problem solving as the number one activity in any organization. Again, and I've said this before, and I probably will say it many times again, and that is that the Future of Jobs report, as published by the World Economic Forum, indicates that critical thinking and complex problem solving are the number one sought after skills in the global job market, but also the most difficult to fill. Now, so our role here on Throttle Up, if you will, is not only to entertain, but to bring this this global phenomena to the forefront and to discuss it in a meaningful way so that we can understand what it means when we say critical thinking and complex problem solving, and what do we do about it? How do we go about improving ourselves, and how do we go about improving our organization with respect to critical thinking and complex problem solving? And that's the whole purpose of this show. And so hopefully we can provide you, the listening audience, and joining with me, we also get better at it on a regular basis, to figure out how we can think better and perform better in our chosen occupation. All right, so we talked about the American economy. Now, let us then press right on to a number of areas that I want to talk about in terms of innovation that is already happening. So here is, we can say that these are examples of innovation across various disciplines and communities. And these examples are, at least hopefully, will be instructive and also motivate us to think of innovative ways of going about and doing things. How can we do them better? And what new ideas can we bring to the marketplace of ideas? And how some of these new ideas might very well be game-changing. So there's a number of game-changing ideas that have already occurred. And so we kind of use this as a model going forward. And the first game-changing idea, and this is huge, this is monumental, and I am not overstating this. The first innovative idea that we're going to discuss is innovation in the energy sector. So what does that mean? Now, I have, again, taken this from an article that was appearing in the Saturday and Sunday edition of the Wall Street Journal, June 30th to July 1st. So it's about a month ago. And I've kind of saved it because it really is an extremely important, it should have hit, should have been front page news across the nation, but we are preoccupied with other things right now. But it shouldn't be. So let me talk about it, and let me see if I can correct that, because this is, in fact, a game-changing innovation in the oil and gas exploration and extracting industry. So let me start this off. Now, this is by Russell Gold, and he has written a number of pieces on American energy. He says that 20 years ago, a well was drilled in Dish, Texas, that changed the world. Nothing at the time suggested the unassuming well in the rural town north of Fort Worth would hobble OPEC, the powerful oil cartel that had governed prices of the world's most important commodity for more than a generation, in other words, oil, or that it would help turn the U.S. into a global energy exporter or shuffle the geopolitical deck. But it did all of that and more. This well, the single well, used hydraulic fracking to crack the incredibly tight shale rocks below the surface. It fired the first shot in the fracking revolution, a blast soon felt in many centers across the world. The innovator, we can trace right back to a single individual. His name happens to be Nick Steinberger. He says that I had no idea it would cause so much change. I was just trying to keep my job. Kind of an understatement. He was the engineer who obtained permission to try a new approach to completing the well that had been drilled a mile and a half deep into a thick gray wedge of rock known as the Barrett Shale. Mr. Steinberger, now 54 years old, called the experiment my slick water frack. It was the first commercially successful use of sand, water, and chemicals pumped into the shale under high pressure to break open the rock and unleash the natural gas trapped inside. It was the beginning of modern fracking. Today, as it turns out, most wells drilled in the U.S. use some variation of Mr. Steinberger's fracking technique. It has unleashed an unimaginable wealth of natural gas, gas liquids, and crude oil, turning the U.S. from an energy pauper into a muscular exporter. It also started an often acrimonious environmental debate about the potential impacts and trade-offs of fracking. It is, however, one of the most extraordinarily important disruptive technologies or disruptive technologically driven changes in the history of energy, said Ed Morse, global head of commodity research at Citigroup. It was revolutionary for the U.S. economy, and it was revolutionary geopolitically. Mr. Steinberger's modest experiment demonstrated that the oil and gas industry had the tools to fracture the rocks where fossil fuels were slowly baked over the millennia. A huge trove of natural gas, and as it turns out, oil was economically feasible. This article goes on to say that after a few years, more companies began to copy the wells drilled by Mr. Steinberger's employer, Mitchell Energy, the firm founded by the late George P. Mitchell. It started in the Barrett Shale, but then it extended itself into other shale deposits, some of them much more productive than the Barrett Shale. And as it turns out, the proliferation of oil and gas production transformed the U.S. energy landscape. So that is innovation in the energy sector. Now, notice how profound that is. To me, it's one of the most profound and important examples of American innovation. Here's a single individual who had this idea, and it was outside the box, completely outside the box. He had this idea of how to pump liquids, a certain combination of liquids, under pressure down a gas well to unlock some of the deposits that were not easily obtainable. And he did it, and it just revolutionized everything, and it turned the United States of America into a global energy power and net exporter of oil and gas, or a net exporter of energy. And it could very well be that, according to projections that I have seen, it could very well be that that we will surpass Saudi Arabia in terms of export energy. I think it's either going to be by 2019 or 2020. Okay, so now let us press on. We are going to be talking about innovation in aerospace next, but first we will take a short break and be right back. Okay, welcome back to, this is a special edition of Throttle Up. This happens to be Innovation in America, Part 4. And we're going to continue our discussion. We just talked about the energy state or innovation in the energy sector. And now we're going to be talking about innovation in air and space. And this is a, this is an amazing area. And the visionaries are now out in force. And that is great. I'm going to be talking again about point of view or a proposal that is being put forth by Newt Gingrich, and his proposal appears in the, it's a magazine that I get. Aviation Week in Space Technology. And this happens to be the July 2nd through the 15th edition of it. And he has a viewpoint or a piece in there. And it's one page. I'm going to be reading some of it because it's particularly important. I want to do it justice because Newt Gingrich has this vision. And the vision involves, well, the vision, generally speaking, involves the air and space sector of America, or the air and space industry, if you will. And he wants to propose that we consider adopting some revolutionary ideas in the arena of air and space, particularly when it comes to hypersonics or hypersonic travel and space flight. Now, he goes on to say that the U.S. is on the brink of a tremendous tipping point of commercial, military, and political opportunities. This historic moment is enabled by a combination of reusable rockets and hypersonic vehicle technologies. In fact, he says, the coming intersection of reusable launch and hypersonic flight. Let's see, I've lost my place here. Hypersonic flight offers the kind of opportunity not seen since the invention of the steam-powered locomotive. So he is basically, what he's saying is that this opportunity for us to expand our horizons with respect to air and space will offer us the same level of opportunities that steam power offered us as peoples, as humans on this planet a century ago. Okay, he says that these technologies with respect to air and space could soon allow humans to travel anywhere on the globe in a couple of hours and provide consistent, low-cost access to space. This will be a tremendous boon to U.S. commerce. Meanwhile, a fleet of hypersonic military vehicles could revolutionize the way, did I say that right? Revolutionize the way we defend our country. If the railroad opened and secured our continent, the combination of reusable rockets and hypersonics will open and secure our solar system. The vision, he says, of burgeoning economic growth on the space frontier and hypersonic military protecting the peace is very real, but it is far from guaranteed. As with all great visions, he says, creating the reality requires time, talent, and treasure. And I would interject here by saying it is an opportunity for an enormous flood of innovation to occur in all sectors. This opportunity doesn't come very often. A few times it has come in my lifetime, and this is a grand opportunity. I think it might very well be one of the greatest opportunities we have for creativity, our creative and innovative talents to come together and to produce all kinds of things that that currently do not exist. He goes on to say that, moreover, as Machiavelli pointed out 500 years ago, where the vision replaces existing systems and capabilities, those representing the status quo will fight to preserve the old order, no matter how superior the new systems and technologies may be. Change is hard and can only be accomplished with strong leadership, great people, short chains of command, incentives, and money. But I would point out a couple of things here as I read this. I would point out that we have to be positioned. We have to position ourselves. We have to establish the platform by which innovation can emerge from. What is that platform? Well, it's a, I would call it a cognitive platform. We have to establish that. Innovation will not happen on a regular basis. It may happen from time to time based upon some, you know, good fortune, but innovation and creativity will not happen on a regular basis unless we have a platform by which or from which it can emerge. Now, what is this platform? What is this innovation incubator, if you will? What is that platform? Now, we discussed this in the past, but, you know, thinking about it, I would say that we probably need to spend a bit more time on that, because while I'm talking about specific innovations and specific industries, I also want to sort of like go back to the beginning by which innovation emerges. What is that innovation incubator? How can we establish for ourselves and for our organizations, how can we establish this innovation platform by which innovation emerges? Okay, so now a lot of people would say, well, we have to create the proper business climate. We have to do this. We have to do that. And I would say, okay, all of that is fine. All of that is well and good. But I think there's something missing. And, you know, I was involved in, I guess I'm going to digress a little bit, but I was involved in one of the most significant and serious innovations in aviation since its beginning. And that happened to be when we redesigned airline pilot training. It is now called the Advanced Airline Pilot Training Program, and I was involved on the ground floor of that initiative, and a whole bunch of innovations were needed and were delivered. So it was one of the most innovative development efforts in recent, at least in recent aviation history. It is still being used 20 years later. It is now being used by all airlines in the United States. And so innovation can happen, and innovation is possible now more than ever. Back then, it was difficult to get this innovative idea going forward because the nation wasn't quite ready for innovation, but it happened anyway in spite of that. But now, I think the country is now much more receptive to this idea across the board within really all of the industries. I think it is available. So, getting back to innovation in air and space, we've had some, but there are great opportunities in this area of hypersonic atmospheric travel as well as space exploration. Now, Newt Gingrich goes on to say that what will be required, we need to have some kind of funding We need to have some kind of demonstration programs that could be funded by various organizations within the government. These programs would be some of the hypersonic demonstrators, some of the launch vehicles that we have that are in the prototype stage. Okay, so government support or government encouragement is important. And I think that while Newt, in my view, Newt has now placed this on the national agenda item. It is now a national agenda. And so it means that while there is a role for government to incentivize this idea of innovation in this industry, I think that the business community ought to come together. I really do. I think that the business community ought to come together and start talking about and embracing this whole idea of innovation. And so that would be my suggestion. All right, let me talk about a couple of other things, and then we're going to get into a little further discussion of innovation and how we can do that within our personal lives, or how we can actually go through the process. There is some kind of way we can organize ourselves. There's some kind of way we can organize our thoughts. There's a way that we can organize our activities. There is a way that we can pursue innovation. And so innovation then becomes a pursuit, a specific pursuit. We could go about doing this. We can start our day by saying to ourselves, okay, today I'm going to pursue some kind of innovative or creative thought process so that I might be able to figure out a better way of doing things or figure out a totally new thing. So what would that be? A totally new thing could be anything. You know, it could be a process. It could be a tangible product. It could be a specific thing that you could touch and feel and look at and carry. It could be a mechanism by which we integrate other things. So it could be a network, and the network could be tangible or could be virtual. It could be a virtual network. It could lots of things can be networked together by using the cloud. So it could be a network of things, or it could be a simplification of things. And it could be the mechanisms by which we extract ourselves from the quagmire of complexity. Now, I think most of you that have listened to this show and read my blog postings and stuff like that realize that one of the things that I continually stress, delve into, and encourage people about is to consider that we live in a complex world, and how can we manage this complexity effectively so it doesn't get the better of us? How can we extract ourselves from what is called the quagmire of complexity? And that is one of the particularly important areas that will actually open up its innovative doorway or pathway. And so it opens up a pathway toward innovation. And innovation, in fact, there's probably lots and lots of areas where innovation can occur with respect to this. Couple of other things, innovation in medicine. As you know, we talked about the Checklist Manifesto by Dr. Gawande. That's a book. I would recommend that. And in that book, he talks about how innovation came into the surgery room, how there was an innovative idea that he was, Dr. Gawande was responsible for, he and his team. I would give him credit for this. And the innovation was in the form of a pre-surgery checklist. All right. So what did that do? That opened up a whole new arena, which is preparation and planning. So a formalization of the preparation and planning process that was necessary prior to the operation, or we can say in general terms, to the mission. So the preparation and planning phase that occurred prior to the mission was particularly important. And that was one of the things that could be improved, and it was improved. In fact, when that kind of preparation and planning phase went in, the instrument was the pre-surgery checklist, that then reduced the death rate due to surgery by a whopping 47%. Incredible improvement in survivability rates within the medical community, particularly in surgery. Also, the complication rate was reduced by 37%. So enormous improvements in a relatively simple, innovative idea. It wasn't very expensive. It wasn't highly technical, but it was the right idea at the right time that produced amazing results. Okay, so I guess you would say that that's probably one of the key aspects of an innovation that works. So innovation that works is the right idea at the right time. And by applying the right idea at the right time, we have these great opportunities here to achieve better performance, to achieve more reliable mission success. Innovation in business is the next one that I want to talk about. And we talked about this before, and many businesses are redefining themselves. They're adopting this, what I call a new business model. Some people call it a new operating model, but we'll just call it a new business model. And what is that? The new business model. The new business model emphasizes providing solutions to the customers. All right, not products, not this or that, but solutions. Now, the solution could be a product. It could be a tangible thing, but it may not be. In other words, a solution could very well be some kind of consultation with the customer, providing the customer with immediate value, not some kind of promise. Some kind of harebrained promise of good things to come if only you buy my product. We're not talking about that. We're talking about providing the customer with solutions, right? Solutions, and it may not result in a sale of a particular product right now. It may not, but that's not the point. The point is that you have the customer on your side. If you go in there and you try to sell a customer this goodie that you have in your goodie bag, it may not be the right way to do it. You may want to go in there and, utilizing critical thinking and complex problem solving, you might go in there and convince the customer, and in a legitimate way, convince the customer that you have a solution to their most pressing problem or most pressing set of problems, and that you are there to provide them with solutions. And the solution might take many forms. It could very well be many forms. In other words, instead of a hardware or a software solution, you might go in there and say that the solution to your problem is, in fact, training. So you may have some internal in-house training program set up that people can go to on a volunteer basis. And this training kiosk might be part of your organization, and employees might go into this training kiosk, which would be something that would be a friendly atmosphere, user-friendly, and they would then learn something about their profession, about their organization, about their industry, learn something that would be useful. So that might very well be the solution instead of throwing in another software program or another piece of hardware that may or may not do the trick. Okay, so solution providers, and that's particularly important in this arena that we call innovation and creativity. All right, so that's the arena that we are living in right now. So that's purpose here, and you can, you know, for a long time, this radio show has been devoted to this area this arena in which innovation and creativity can emerge. All right, we're going to take a short break and be right back. Okay, we are back. This is Throttle Up, special edition, Innovation in America, Part 4. And now I want to talk about the 8 essentials of innovation. We talked a little bit previously about some innovations in various sectors of the economy. And now, I hope that was an inspiration. The reason, it certainly is for me. You know, when I put this show together and I looked at all of this stuff, it really was inspiring. It ought to be an inspiration for all of us that we can look at innovation as possible. We can look at innovation as certainly within our realm of activity, even look at it as our responsibility. We are responsible for fostering innovation in America, all of us. And we should be thinking about that. Remember, fracking was discovered by a single individual. Many innovations in aerospace was discovered by a single individual. I know that Richard Whitcomb discovered 3 breakthrough innovative ideas in his career. And that's a single individual, by the way. And so innovation is possible across the board. Now, here is 8 essentials of innovation. This is a paper that was published by McKinsey and Company, and they are involved in strategy and corporate finance. The subtitle of this article is, and this is really quite an amazing article, so I want to recommend it. Again, the title is The 8 Essentials of Innovation. You can find it anywhere. The subtitle is Strategic and Organizational Factors Are What Separate Successfully Big Company Innovators from the Rest of the Field. It goes on to say that it's no secret. Innovation is difficult for well-established companies by and large. They are better executors than innovators, and most succeed less through game-changing creativity than by optimizing their existing businesses. Yet hard as it is for organizations to innovate, large ones as diverse as Alcoa, the Discovery Group, and NASA Ames are actually doing so. What can other companies learn from their approaches and attributes? That question formed the core of a multi-year study comprising in-depth interviews, workshops, and surveys of more than 2,500 executives in over 300 companies, including both performance leaders and laggards in a broad set of industries and countries. Since innovation is a complex company-wide endeavor, it says, it requires a set of cross-cutting practices and processes to structure, organize, and encourage it. In other words, they're using this to come to grips with innovation, to try to organize it and encourage it in some kind of meaningful way instead of just wishful thinking. And a lot of organizations wish that they were innovative, hope that they will become innovative, but that's about it. Now, there's ways that we can go beyond that to encourage it and to set the stage for innovation. In other words, we create our innovative platform or platform by which innovation emerges. Now, what are these cross-disciplinary structures? As if we structure the environment, the structural expression of the environment in which this company, organization, or individual resides, all right? The first thing is to aspire. And I'm going to cover these quickly now, but we'll discuss more of them later. The first one is aspire. The second one is to choose. Third one, discover. Fourth one, evolve. Fifth one, accelerate. Sixth one, scale. Seventh one, extend. And the final one is to mobilize. Aspire. What is aspire? Aspire is the vision. What is the vision? Establish a quantitative innovation aspiration is not enough. However, the target value needs to be apportioned to the relevant business owners and cascade down to their organizations in the form of performance targets and timelines. So once we create the vision, we have to go beyond that. We have to have the vision, and then we have to have the mission statement, and then we have to have the mission objectives. All right, so that all is part of this this aspire thing, that we aspire to be good at what we are doing or to be better. Or let's put it more specifically. Let's say we are an individual in an organization, or we are a single individual, all right? And we aspire to be a solutions provider. We are going to go out there into the business world, or the military world, or the government world. We're going to get out in that world, and we are going to be solutions providers. We are going to aspire to be solution providers. And then so that's our vision. And now we need to turn that into a mission statement, which we can based upon the particular arena that we are in. For example, my mission statement would be largely related to aviation, since that is my particular industry, but it could be any industry. So once we have that vision and the mission statement, then we can cascade down to look at the specific mission objectives that will drive us forward. Okay, so we'll discuss this very important piece on the 8 essentials of innovation next week. And I think it's going to be really interesting as we get into this and look at there are specific ways in which we can organize ourselves to be much more innovative and creative, to spur on this ability of ours to innovate and create. And remember, that's a unique ability. That is the whole idea of fostering or boosting our power of reason. And so that is important. And that concludes this portion of Throttle Up. And now for our final closing discussion. Before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here. And I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.